Okay, good morning. First, I actually would like to thank Vicky for actually convening this session. And it's actually in line with AAPHP's mission to actually provide support for accredited programs. And we see that this session does serve that purpose. So, Vicky, really, thank you for doing that. And this has given me a moment to really think about when we first began accreditation. So as a brand new faculty member at San Jose State University, I'm happy to say Bill Washington was chair, and he's actually in the audience, and he made me realize this, that I came to the campus and Kathleen Rowe, who was the MPH program director at that time, and for those of you who know Kathleen Rowe, my first introduction to CEEF accreditation was, "This is going to be fun." And I thought to myself, "Fun? How could this be fun?" Anne Demers, who is also in the audience, who is part of the MPH core faculty, now looks at me and shakes her head when I say, "We're in accreditation mode. This is going to be fun." So actually, when you think about it, it actually can be fun, and it's an extraordinary opportunity. And so thinking about what I was going to talk about today, it's a big topic, reaccreditation of an MPH program. I decided to keep it really focused. I decided to think about what were the strategies that have really worked for us over the many, many years of accreditation, because this is actually my third cycle of accreditation and reaccreditation. And I thought it would be really helpful for you to basically, or for me to share some of the strategies that we've used. And very specifically, the theme that I think is really important is the value of stakeholders and community partners, and how the input by them have actually profoundly changed our curriculum and has created curricular innovation. So this presentation is going to be pretty practical, because I'm going to give you really direct links to curricular changes that we've made. So the key points, as Gary said, he likes to do things in 3 points. I do things in three as well. I'm going to give you three innovations, but the 3 points of my agenda are the history of our program, strategies for including key stakeholders and community partners, and then also three innovations that have happened and occurred in our program as a result. So we've been around a really long time. In fact, we are a specialization. We're very proud of this in community health education. The MPH program has been in existence since 1970, before accreditation. We've been continuously accredited since 1974. Our MPH program is 42 units. It's a 42-unit program of study. And 7 years ago, we initiated our distance format of the MPH program. And so we have campus, and then we also have distance, which was really an interesting process for us. Campus is offered through state support, and distance is offered through special session, which actually, CEEF was actually a little bit concerned about resources and us being able to pull that off. But in essence, what's happened, and they will be happy to see when they come to our site visit in May, that it's actually provided us a lot of resources, because special session is actually self-support, which actually generates revenue for us. And so that's actually been extraordinarily helpful for us. So our current CEEF accreditation, December 2014 is when we submit our preliminary self-study, and then May we have our site visit. And I want to really talk about advisory group, because when we think about advisory groups and we think about input, it could happen in many different ways. And we've actually used them quite effectively, and we've used them with real purpose. And so I always thought advisory groups were really great for our strategic visioning, which they are, and they became very critical for our recent merger between health science and recreation. I'm actually really happy that our department has merged with recreation when we think about the emphasis of outdoor environments and recreation, and it's actually a really interesting marriage between the two departments. And so that was extraordinarily important for us to bring the key stakeholders of health science, MPH, and also recreation together to be talking about, so who are we now? And so you can think big with an advisory group, but then you can also think very specific and very purposeful. And then in addition to that, this structure served us really well. is what we call SEAF working groups. And what we did is we did a self-analytical assessment of where our vulnerabilities lie. And we decided to construct or create what we call SEAF working groups. And I'm going to give you an example of what that is. From the last self-study in 2007, we created 4 working groups. Program governance was really an important thing. We assessed that we really needed more input by students into the governance structure of our MPH program, so we set up a governance SEAF working group. And the structure of each SEAF working group is variable. It depends on what the purpose is. And so it was we would have a MPH core faculty lead. We would have certainly alumni. Now we have distance and campus alumni. And then we also have student representation, and then any others as deemed appropriate. So for example, in governance, we needed to also include university officials, for example. Curriculum was really, really critical because, many of you would recall, we were actually one of the first programs to go up with the new criteria of SEAF, and so we decided curriculum was a really important working group in 2007. And then, as usual, professional development was an important thing, and community engagement, which also included alumni, were our 4 SEAF working groups that we decided were really, really important. For 2014, for our site visit, we have 3 working groups. We felt admissions was really, really critical. Since distance was a new format, it was something that was new to us. We really needed to streamline our admissions process. We seemed to work and operate in silos, campus, and then distance, and then voila, we figured we should kind of have a more streamlined process for outreach. And now this is actually our first year and our first time that we've actually combined our marketing strategy. So there's no reason why a prospective applicant couldn't learn about the campus format of our program and to also learn about the distance format of our program. And then alumni relations, and specifically with alumni relations, a lot of data reporting requirements because of what we need to do for SEAF. That was the second SEAF working group. And then, guess what? Professional development. And with a renewed emphasis of professional development, I really was glad to hear Gary say that professional development is not after or post-graduation. It's an ongoing process. And so we've actually done something really innovative, and it's the first time Molly's going to be hearing this, and I'm really curious to see what she says about what we've done. So it's a little scary. So the 3 program innovations that I will share with you, one is about our culminating experience, really radical change in what we've done with our culminating experience. And with the advent of the distance format of our program, we had to really think about innovative ways of how we do that. We also did, again, professional development for specifically professional development for our community practitioners, but with an innovation that I'm going to share with you is specific to our students. And then applied data analysis course, and that came from extraordinary feedback from our alumni. So people who have graduated, they shared with us, they said, it's so interesting. And with a change in the curriculum of our program where we used to have many projects and many theses, the distance format, project and thesis are no longer an option for a culminating experience because it's a 2-year lockstep program. And then also with the economic changes, many of our campus students wanted to finish in 2 years. Thesis and project was not really feasible. So we had to have a really meaningful culminating experience that would be purposeful and really meet our student needs. And so we came up with a radically different comprehensive exam. But our graduates also said, if I don't do a project and if I don't do a thesis, how in the world do you expect me to work with my own data? And that was really a relevant fact, is that how do you work with data when you're a community health practitioner? If you haven't had the opportunity in an MPH program, when will you have that? And the applied data analysis class happened because of that. So the comprehensive exam, I'm going to give you some context, some background, and then I'm going to tell you the need, and then I'm going to present the innovation. So with the comprehensive exam, it became, for the culminating experience at San Jose State University, most of our students will take a comprehensive exam. And the previous format of our exam was basically regurgitation of a lot of the course content. Our students really kind of freaked out about that. They didn't like it, and faculty didn't necessarily like rating them. And so we decided that we would just kind of really rethink our comprehensive exam. And so we really needed to do that, and we decided to go for outside help. And when you think about, and this is something that was said also in the previous presentation, is go back to the criteria. Okay, go to the criterion. And so I went back to the criterion for the culminating experience, and this is Steve's criterion. And the operational words for me was an experience or a culminating experience that approximates some aspect of professional practice. And so that served as like the guiding framework to bring in a advisory group. So we brought in an advisory group in 2009, and the group was comprised of community health practitioners, alumni, recent graduates, and a current student. And we actually just put it out there. We just said, so here's what Steve is expecting of us. Here's what we've done in the past. We really want to rethink this. What do you think? And it was pretty astonishing. It was actually a really basic process. Everyone went into one specific focused area, and this is what they came up with. Is that they came up with an RFP, that they felt that one of the most valuable experiences, and when you really think about what approximates public health practice, what a public health practitioner will do, is a response to a request for a proposal. But they also cautioned us, and they said not to do a full proposal. It's unrealistic in an examination setting to do a whole request for a proposal. And so we did it in a very guided, it's a guided request. So it's a request with very specific points of information that we want students to respond to. And it's a very guided process. And so our comprehensive exam is actually a 3-day process now. And it's done in a computer lab. And what we really are really pleased about in our distance format, our distance students are away from us. But for the comprehensive exam, it's their opportunity that they come on campus. During graduation, right before they graduate, they take their comprehensive exam. And so the integrity of that has been really, really, really helpful. And then we also had an MPH, what we call an MPH expert panel. We actually did the first draft of the examination. We gave it to the expert panel. They gave us extensive feedback, and we actually piloted it with 3 alumni. And it was an incredible experience. The things that we're really pleased about, our old comprehensive exam addressed a lot of the content areas, but it didn't really address competencies. And so this request and response to an RFP has actually accomplished these competencies that we are really, really happy about. So I'm not going to go through them, but you can see it's identifying problems and needs, looking at program planning, looking at cultural competencies, looking at community assets. We were able to kind of include all those major competencies that we deemed really important as a community health ed program. So here's the really big innovation. It's professional development for students. And so we have a 42, and this actually has served a couple of really important purposes for us. Being a California State University with very limited resources, we only have a 42-unit. We have the absolute minimum required of a 42-unit MPH program of study. And with that, we have no electives. And there's a problem with no electives. The problem with no electives is that students don't have opportunities to specialize in a particular area. So we saw this as an opportunity. So we always know that field work is always an opportunity for them to specialize. So we really wanted to actually structure it to even go outside of field work. And so what we saw as an opportunity is to create this innovation for professional development for students. And so we developed a new policy. We decided to look at their 400 hours. We were committed to 400 hours, okay, of field work as a community health ed education, community health ed program. But we decided to carve 40 hours of the 400 hours and to give them opportunities beyond what is sponsored in the fieldwork placement site, and it would count towards their total 400 hours. And so we had to come up with an operational definition of what professional development meant, and we came up with any facilitated and documented public health learning opportunity offered in person or online, being consistent with what our distance format was as well, such as workshops, trainings, staff development, in-service opportunities, and professional conferences offered beyond the practicum or field work experience. And so I just want to give you an idea. So we had to come up with a rubric. We know that CEF really likes rubrics. They really like that. okay? And they want documentation. So what are you talking about when you say this? So we came up with a rubric. I knew in anticipation of them coming that we would have to have a rubric. And so I wasn't going to show you the rubric because it's too many words for a slide. But here are the activities that we included: earning continuing education credit, attending a professional conference, workshop or training. We actually operationalized each of these items. Being a grant reviewer, participation in public health event, committee planning, or any other event that we wanted to open the door to any possibility that may not have been included in our faculty list, that a student could petition, as long as they got approval, that we would count that towards their 40 hours of professional development. And so this is brand new for us. We've gotten incredible feedback by students. They're able to do a GIS training. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done that in our MPH program. So it's been really, really wonderful for us. So this is only one row of our documentation for CEEF. It is earning continuing education credit. It can include any of these things. And what's the documentation that's really necessary? So we have a checkoff. It's a certificate of completion. And then it gets even more involved with each of the additional items of our matrix. And then the applied data analysis class. And Gary talked about the Council on Linkages. And one of the things and one of the key competencies that the Council on Linkages states is that for a public health practitioner to really have confidence in qualitative and quantitative data analysis skills. And so that was really important for us, and especially if students were not going to be able to do that in a project in a thesis, we had to come up with something. And it was also a challenge in our distance format. How do you do that? How do you do that in one semester? How do you do that without an IRB? And how do you do that creatively within a semester? And so that was our really, really, really big challenge. And so, and I'm not going to give you this, it would be a 20-minute story of how I came up with this idea, but just know that we decided to use modern means of social media and the internet. And so what we did is we developed a course that provides two things, and I'm going to highlight the quantitative part of this first, but let me give you an overview of what the course does. It provides students with direct experience with collecting primary, qualitative, and also quantitative data. So they have two sets of data. And we use online technology and survey tools, and they use social networking sites. Their intervention is YouTube. It's a 3-minute intervention, and you would be surprised about what you can learn in a 3-minute YouTube intervention. And the basic requirement is that YouTube has to convey skills, and it also has to increase knowledge. And you can do that in a 3-minute YouTube intervention. So, and that's brought up incredible discussions about that, about the framework as health educators. It's not just merely increasing knowledge, we're also increasing skill. And although we will not be able to observe, or they will not be able to observe a skill in being advanced, they're able to measure their participants' self-assessed confidence level, which is a different measure than knowledge, which had great implications for how they analyze their data. So let me just emphasize this. We have students who are great whizzes in biostatistics. Right? They take research methods, but research methods is just a plan for data analysis. And I was convinced, and the MPH core faculty are now convinced, that really, no matter how good you are, it's not until you have your own data, you conceptualize data in rows and columns, you look at the different types of data and how do you apply that and how do you report that out. It's been an extraordinary process for our students. And then for the quantitative part, just to give you a little basic framework, they select a YouTube video. We hate to censor anything, but we have to censor some of this. We do not want a video on pole dancing. It's just because you're sending it out to your social network and you're representing San Jose. So we really want to be really clear about some of the acceptable topics. I hate to be that kind of person. I teach this course. They identify a sampling frame, and it's extraordinary, the numbers in their social networks, right? Facebook, Twitter, their email lists. They deconstruct the video, and this in itself is an incredible process. They deconstruct the YouTube video, and what they do is they look at what's the knowledge base and what's the skill base, and they have to translate that into a survey, and they create a survey. And then they have to pilot the questions, and then they launch it through Qualtrics, which is actually an incredible thing. It's free to our students, and it's free to our faculty. They implement the survey with the chosen sample. They import the data to SPSS. This is just the quantitative part. They conduct the appropriate descriptive and inferential statistical tests, which I had always assumed that they got from biostatistics, but they really need to kind of freshen up. Our biostatistics course does not emphasize nonparametric statistics, and this is the opportunity for us to really look at nonparametric statistics, especially when you're talking about confidence in interval data types. It's been extraordinary. So they get a really good introduction to nonparametric statistics. They interpret data, and the really important thing is that they are able to report their own primary data into a format that is suitable for the results section of a publishable paper. And so students are able to be able to do that in this class. So our lessons learned, I already said this, is that don't assume that just because they ace biostatistics and research methods that they know how to work with data. And conclusions of this entire presentation, not surprisingly, there are three. Use multiple ways of engaging stakeholders. Stakeholder perspectives are really invaluable, and they lead to innovations that you would never have imagined on your own, and hopefully our creative innovations will be in sync with CEF, and I presume Molly will let me know that. So thank you.
How exciting for me to get to listen from my colleagues. Thank you, all three of you, again. Before I open it up for questions, I want to point out a couple of people that I can actually see in the audience who are also board members of our organization, the Association Accredited MPH Programs. I saw Justice, do you want to? And I saw Steve, and is there anyone else on our board here? Another thing that I do want to mention that has been critical in helping us in our further accreditation or reaccreditation is the fact that we have colleagues that we can contact. And whenever there's a problem or a question, our organization or just the fact that I can contact any one of these people here, and especially Ed, who's our sister organization, I'm at Cal State Northridge, I can call any one of these people or email now and say, I have this problem, what do you suggest I do? So this networking is critical for reaccreditation or beginning the accreditation process.